Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's announcement by the Secretary of Defence and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs allowing women in the military to soon serve in combat. A former sergeant and Arabic-speaking intelligence specialist who served with the 101st Airborne Division in Iraq, Kayla Williams, joins us. The author of Love My Rifle More Than You, Young and Female in the U.S. Army, she will tell us how she feels about what President Obama calls an historic step. Then, with today's news of the impending resignation of Assistant Attorney General Lanny Brewer and the nomination of Mary Jo White to head up the Securities and Exchange Commission, we will speak with Martin Smith, the producer of the just-broadcast PBS Frontline special The Untouchables, which is about the failure of the Justice Department to prosecute those responsible for the 2008 financial meltdown that caused the recession and the impoverishment of millions of Americans. Then finally, we'll examine the latest explicit threat from North Korea against the United States with the announcement that they will soon conduct a bigger nuclear test in defiance of the United Nations Security Council sanctions imposed in response to a recent North Korean missile test. Sung Yoon Lee, a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, joins us to discuss the meaning and motives behind Pyongyang's heated rhetoric. And joining us now is Kayla Williams, who was a former sergeant and Arabic linguist in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division. During her deployment to Iraq, Williams was at the forefront of troop interaction with Iraqis and also navigated the challenges of being part of the 15% of the army that is female. Kayla is the author of Love My Rifle More Than You, Young and Female in the U.S. Army, a memoir about her experiences negotiating the challenging demands of today's military. Kayla is a Truman National Security Project Fellow and a former member of the VA Advisory Committee on Women Veterans. She currently lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband, a combat wounded veteran, and their two young children. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kayla Williams.
Thank you so much for having me.
And the announcement today by the Secretary of Defense and by the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs that women are now able to be in combat is a little bit, at least it sounds a little bit like the horse is down the paddock and the barn door is open. Haven't women already been in combat?
We have been serving in combat for a little over a decade now. However, we have been banned from combat arms jobs, such as the infantry, the artillery, armor, and from combat arms units at below the brigade level. So this momentous change does formalize what you say has been the boots on the ground reality that women have been in combat, but also tremendously expands the numbers of positions and roles that we can fill.
And of course, I've interviewed before Tammy Duckworth, who's now in the Congress, who lost her legs in Iraq. Nobody could suggest that she wasn't in combat.
Exactly, but she was a pilot, not an infantryman.
But there are women pilots also in serving in Apache helicopters, etc., in combat in Afghanistan as we speak.
Absolutely. Women have been fighter pilots and are now also serving on nuclear submarines. So this is a major change when it comes to serving in ground combat positions and ground combat units, one that really, in my opinion, validates the honorable service that so many of us have engaged in over the past decade.
So a lot of our listeners are on the liberal side of the political spectrum, and they might be wondering why women should be celebrating being able to kill their fellow humans.
I believe this is a tremendous step forward for full equality. Those who have actually been to combat, I think, are in many ways less likely to advocate the use of force and going to war than others, because we have seen how horrific combat can actually be. But in terms of advancing women's position in society, many of us truly desire to be able to serve the nation that we are citizens of. It is an important part of taking part in the civic process. And I would urge all of those who believe that our military should not be used as vigorously to participate fully in the democratic process and encourage their elected officials to be judicious in choosing which conflicts they decide to send our military to.
Again, I'm speaking with Kayla Williams, who was a former sergeant and Arabic linguist in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division, and she was deployed in Iraq and was at the forefront of troops' interaction with Iraqis and also navigated the challenge of being part of the 15% of the army that is female, and is the author of Love My Rifle More Than You, Young and Female in the U.S. Army. So is this then really about job descriptions and job fairness and pay equity as much as anything else?
Those are all very important parts of the issue. I also believe that the former policy, the policy that's just now ending, that excluded women from these combat arms positions, it really made women in the military second-class citizens. And that, I believe, contributed to a climate that tacitly encouraged sexual harassment and allowed sexual assault to flourish. It is my belief that by making very clear to all troops that women are equal, that we are full soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, that we do not exist in separate but equal roles in any way, that we truly are troops like all others, that it will help to change that climate and make the military a better place for women to serve.
Well, Kelly Williams, there's certainly a lot of evidence, and there was just a general officer who's just put on trial for a rape in Afghanistan, raping a female subordinate. And I've spoken to a number of women veterans who have been raped in the military and have had a hard time getting justice and cracking the kind of boys' club of either, you know, indifference or cover-up. So explain to our audience how making women equal in terms of being able to engage in combat, how that will make a difference with the mentality of the men in the military who, I mean, my interpretation is from what you're saying is perhaps they think that because you aren't in combat, you're there as sort of some kind of decoration or comfort. I mean, explain it to me better than I'm trying to get my head around it.
I may not go quite that far, but yeah, so far women have served in combat support and combat service support roles. When I was sexually harassed in the military and complained about it to my peers, many of the men that I served with responded by saying things along the lines of, you shouldn't report it and ruin some man's career just because you can't take it. And that feeling from my peer group that men's careers in the military were automatically more important than my career in the military, that's at the heart of what I'm trying to explain. That the perception was they were in, these men, they're combat arms, they're real soldiers, and here I am, I'm just a woman, I didn't really fully belong there, and I shouldn't cause problems and make waves because I couldn't take it. I believe that once women are seen more fully as sisters in arms, as being full participants in the military, that that attitude over time will become less acceptable, and it will start to make a dent in the long run in those unacceptably high rates of sexual harassment and assault.
So what do you make of some of the resistance that still is there? There was criticism of today's announcement by the Secretary of Defense and by the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, for example, from Senator James Imhoff, Republican of Oklahoma, and he's a leading Republican on the Armed Services Committee. And he said that it raises serious practical barriers that, if ignored, could jeopardize the safety and privacy of service members. We've heard similar arguments about gays in the military, about how it affects combat readiness and performance, that women are some kind of distraction. Address all of those criticisms, if you will, Kayla.
If I may be frank, I just find that silly. I think it disregards the reality of today's experiences. Women are already there. They're already in those situations as medics, as military police, as supply sergeants, as helicopter pilots, as military intelligence personnel. We are already there. We are already in foxholes. We are already in tents. We're already alongside our male comrades in Humvees and on helicopters and in planes. So, as was also true with gay personnel before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, many of the same people who are now speaking out against further equality for women in the military were the ones who predicted dire consequences from the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. They've been proven tremendously wrong on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which has gone off without problems, and I believe that they will be proven just as wrong about the coming changes of women's positions in the military.
And again, I'm speaking with Kayla Williams, a former sergeant and Arabic linguist in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division, who served in Iraq and navigated the challenge of being part of the 15% of the army that is female, and is the author of Love My Rifle More Than You, Young and Female in the U.S. Army. I was just recently on vacation at a wedding in Australia, and I happened to be sitting next to a woman, and we got chatting, and she turned out that she was the first female captain of a warship in the Australian Navy in combat, both in Timor and in Iraq. And I was pretty impressed with this woman because,
absolutely,
you know, she was the commander of a ship and had hundreds of men under her command and had been in combat. And, of course, you know, Iraq and Timor was some time ago. So the impression I have is that the U.S. is really behind a lot of other countries in this regard.
Certainly some other countries, that is true. And within the U.S. military, there are changes between the services. Women have been allowed to serve on nuclear submarines for, I think, a couple years now. Women have been allowed to be fighter pilots in the Air Force for quite a few years. And it's really the ground combat services, the Army and the Marine Corps, that have been a little behind. And indeed, we are behind Australia. My belief is that the United States will probably be looking at Australia's model of implementing the elimination of the combat exclusion policy for ground forces. Australia is just getting started with that implementation this year as well. They expect it to be a 3-year process wrapping up in 2016. And from what I've seen so far, that looks like that's going to be the case here in the U.S. as well.
So specifically, what the Pentagon is announcing here is it would open up about 14,000 combat-related positions to female troops, but an estimated 238,000 other jobs, about one-fifth of the regular active duty military, were kept off-limit by women, have been kept off-limit, right?
Right. Those 14,000 were opened up about a year ago as, I believe, a type of pilot to see how this would work out, and that, from what I understand from the press conference earlier today, that went well, and they've decided to go ahead and make these additional changes. The big change now is that instead of the Department of Defense prohibiting by regulation women from serving in combat jobs and combat units at smaller sizes, now the burden is going to be on the military services to argue that women should still be prevented from serving in particular jobs. They have a few months to make their arguments, if they choose to do so, about which, if any, jobs they believe should still be closed to women. There's certainly a chance that the Army and Marine Corps will say that, for example, special forces jobs should still be off limits to women. So there are a lot of specific details still to be worked out in terms of the implementation, what the specific standards will be for some of these jobs as they get open. And it's going to be really interesting to see how things go as we move forward over the next few months.
But Kayla Williams, my understanding is that women are necessary in, and I assume this applies to both special forces and intelligence units, because they're pretty much at the tip of the spear in the current deployments in Afghanistan, for example. And even though we're reducing our somewhat unwelcome footprint in Islamic lands, you probably had firsthand experience of having to deal with Iraqi women because of religious strictures. You know, men can't pat down Muslim women. So give us a sense of the roles that you've played in the past and the kind of interactions you've had.
You're absolutely right. Women, female soldiers have an absolutely vital role to play in counterinsurgency operations that are a key component of which is trying to win the hearts and minds of the local populations, especially in Muslim countries where it is more challenging for local women to feel free speaking to male soldiers. So we can be absolutely vital components of that struggle. And I think we've been playing those roles already. We've been in those positions alongside special forces already. Again, we've been attached and not assigned to those units, and that may continue to be the case. Really, we have yet to see what the services are going to decide to push for.
So just tell us a little bit about your personal experience as an Army intelligence specialist in Iraq. And there aren't too many Arabic speakers, at least in the early part of the Iraq war, there wasn't. Presumably they've improved the numbers considerably by now, but you must have been pretty valuable.
Yes, I was actually trained to do signals intelligence, but when we invaded Iraq, there was a much stronger need for me to serve as an interpreter, and so I did go out on combat foot patrols with the infantry in Baghdad. I was able to translate between infantry troops and the local population. It was one of the most fulfilling parts of my military career because I could see that I was making a difference in helping to provide communication between these two groups.
So what did your fellow male soldiers think of you? And how did they treat you?
During major combat operations, when I was going out on combat foot patrols with the infantry in Baghdad, the only thing that mattered to them was that I spoke Arabic. It was absolutely the only thing that they cared about. When I would run into them months later, they would say, "Oh, hey, you're our linguist in Baghdad." That was what mattered to them. When major combat operations were over and the tempo of operations slowed down, people had more time on their hands and were bored, things became more challenging and instances of sexual harassment did take place. But during those major combat operations, my ability to help them accomplish the mission was the only thing that mattered.
But the fact that you did that didn't count as much as it would if you were a male.
I would not say that. I know that there have been women who
in
have
terms
not been
of, in
able
terms
to get
of a career.
Certain awards.
Right.
But for me, I was recognized for what I did and felt honored and valued for my ability to help accomplish the mission.
But in terms of a career path, the impression I get is that this rule change today levels the playing field in terms of a career path.
Right, I think that's absolutely true. It's more so for officers, but it's very important that women will now be able to go to some of the schools that they've been banned from so far, such as Ranger School. That certainly makes people far more competitive when it comes to promotions.
I see. So, well, just in closing, Kayla Williams, I guess you're feeling happy about this. I mean, that's...
I am. If I can be a tiny bit cheesy, listening to President Obama's inaugural address on Monday when he mentioned from Seneca to Selma to Stonewall, talking about the march of equality, I thought it was great. I immediately thought of Don't Ask, Don't Tell and what tremendous progress has been made, but I did not expect an announcement this momentous, this soon, on women's rights, women's equality. To me, it's a real fulfillment of that promise and a vindication of the service of so many of our women throughout this nation's history.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Kayla Williams.
Thank you, and have a great evening.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Kayla Williams, who's a former sergeant and Arabic linguist in a military intelligence company of the 101st Airborne Division. During her deployment to Iraq, she was at the forefront of troops' interaction with Iraqis while also navigating the challenges of being part of the 15% of the army that is female. Kayla is the author of Love My Rifle More Than You, Young and Female in the U.S. Army, a memoir about her experiences negotiating the changing demands of today's military. And she is a Truman National Security Project Fellow and a former member of the VA Advisory Committee on Women's Veterans. And she currently lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband, a combat wounded veteran, and their two young children. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the producer and correspondent of the Explosive Frontline special, Exposing the Untouchables on Wall Street.
To be a woman and to be turned down, old enough now to change your name, when so many love you, is it the It's the woman in you that makes you wanna play this game.